welcome. You're listening to The Computer Guys. I'm Dave.
And I'm Kevin, and we're The Computer Guys here from Macatawa Technologies for the next half hour to answer all your computer and technology-related questions.
That's right, Kev, a snowy Wednesday afternoon here. Warm and cozy here in the studios, though, so give us a call, 395-1450. We'd be happy to help you out here. It always makes the show much more interesting than just hearing us jabber on about computers for a half hour. Although I guess that can be fun sometimes, too.
Sure. We've got lots of news to talk about if, you don't call. Otherwise, you're going to have to listen to Dave just talk and talk and talk. So just remember, if you want to hear somebody else talk, call in.
That's right. 395-1450. But if you're a little phone shy, you can always send us an email.
Yep. It's computerguys@whtc.com. We'll be checking that throughout the show as well as throughout the week. So go ahead, fire us an email, and we'll do our best to get to it on the show.
You know, Kev, a lot of times we don't actually find out whether or not our advice is actually any good or not.
That's right.
You know, callers call in or email here, and we give it our best shot, and you never know. But last week we had an email here from Kathy wondering, she said the date and time shows when an email was sent to me is way off.
Sure.
I was wondering if there was a way to fix that. She has SBC Yahoo email.
Mm-hmm.
For example, it was sent at 2:06 a.m. with tomorrow's date. So she was wondering about that. And our suggestion for that one was to go change your time zone in the lower right-hand corner. Yep. Remember that? Change it to the correct.
No, because if she was using the
We don't know if that was the case. But anyway, to change the time zone. And she said, send an email, said that worked.
Hey, that's what we're talking about.
So that's good news. Glad to hear that helped.
Yep.
Kev, here we go. This is something maybe you want to check out. You got a new phone a couple weeks ago, also known as a computer.
That's right. A little pocket computer.
Makes phone calls from your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one running the Windows Mobile.
Yep, Windows Mobile 6. It's the 800W. It's one of the latest, not quite the latest now. There's a newer one out. But essentially it's the same phone, just available on different networks. It's the Treo, depending on how you want to say it, the 800W, which is their latest revision. And it's a business phone. You can do a lot of like cool, fun stuff, but it's not the flashy phone that the iPhone is. But it's a pretty powerful phone. It runs a lot of different applications and allows you to do quite a bit from your pocket.
Well, here's one more thing, one more application you can install. Have you heard of Microsoft Tag?
Mm-mm, haven't.
Okay, Microsoft Research has come up with a new product called, a new software program called Microsoft Tag. You just aim your camera phone at a tag and instantly access mobile content, videos, music, contact information, maps, social networks, promotions, and more. Nothing to type, no browsers to launch.
Just by taking a picture.
You take a picture. Well, it's actually what it is. It's kind of a cool little let me just finish the little description here. Device support is fairly extensive. Works for the iPhone, Windows Mobile, BlackBerry, and more. And tag scanning appears to work quickly and reliably from different distances and angles. The tag is similar to a barcode, but has obvious visual differences. For instance, it's colored versus regularly barcodes are black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It also has triangles versus squares or lines. So what you do basically with you install Microsoft Tag on your phone.
Okay.
And let's say you go to a store and you see this funny looking triangular barcode looking thing. You take a picture of that and it will bring you to more information on that product or whatever happens to be there. For instance, they could do it at bus stops where maybe you want to get the information on all the bus stops. So you take a little picture, takes you to a website.
That's cool.
Gives you all information about it.
So, I have not seen one of these tags.
No, well, this is new. Okay. So obviously,
only available in California.
It's a program that you can install, and
but to take the thing that you're taking the picture off.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, they're just launching the software here, so the hope is that let's say you go to the movie theater, and there's a little triangular shaped barcode thing on there. Aim your camera at it from your phone.
Now
take the picture.
The bus stop application, that's attractive. So you're in a new city, public transit system. You know, you go to one bus stop, bam, you do that. You've got all the timetables, the costs, all that instantly available. That's cool. I like it.
Yeah. So there's definitely some, or who knows, maybe you go to a restaurant. And you know how a lot of times restaurants post their menu outside?
Yeah.
Maybe you click on there, takes you to a site with some reviews or whatever else you might have.
I like that.
So, and the easiest thing is, you just point it, take the picture, yep. Automatically does everything for you.
So. I like that. Well, one thing about, you know, the phone coming with a new version of Windows Mobile, there's this there's basically this live search program, which is really cool. You know, we've talked about Google Maps for the phone before and how you can do some, it does actual positioning with a certain kind of phone, and it'll show you where you are on that map, and it moves with you. This is one better. You basically just coordinate. You say, okay, take the coordinates for my location, look up movie listings. You can look up local real estate listings. It'll do live mapping, and it will actually track with your phone just like a GPS system, except this all comes in over the air using your internet connection. And all this stuff's instantly available, completely free. You can do the satellite overlay, so you can see the actual satellite imagery using Alive Maps, which has some of the best mapping out there on the internet. And this is all completely free, instantly available. So there's just a lot of really great functionality in the newer smartphones. So that's
okay,
cool.
You're kind of making me jealous.
Yeah, I know.
You can borrow it. Microsoft Tag is the name of that program that we're just talking about there. So,
yep, I'm going to have to check that out. And I will probably download it and we'll never be able to use it because I'm not thinking it's going to come soon to anywhere near us.
Hey, you know what the thing is? Anybody can use those little tags. You can go make your own for your business.
Ooh, I want to make one.
Yeah, so you could make a little tag.
I'm going to just start tagging random items all over the place.
Well, it sounds like a lot of work, Kev. So I'm going to say it's probably not going to happen.
And nobody else will ever look at them.
Also, here's one. If you use iTunes and you purchase music, they offer the digital rights management free, you know, files that don't include that.
A little bit more expensive.
Well, if you're purchasing those, you may want to think twice about sharing those on some of the P2P networks, sharing.
They track it.
Well, Apple iTunes Plus files are DRM free, but sharing those files on P2P networks may be an extremely bad idea. A report published by CNET highlights the fact that the account information and email address of the iTunes account holder is hidden inside each and every DRM-free download.
Interesting.
This person, this is a story from Slashdot. They checked and found they couldn't access the information using the ID3 tag editor, but using Notepad, they found their email address stored inside the audio file itself.
Tricky.
Huh. So maybe you don't want to, if you do purchase legitimately the DRM-free songs from iTunes, probably don't want to share those around.
Wow, that's crazy. Hey, this is kind of interesting. Have you seen the claims about Apple's new 17-inch MacBook Pro and the battery life?
No.
Okay, they're claiming 8-hour battery life on a 17-inch. Now, this is a big laptop. Those giant screens, the thing doesn't even feel like a laptop anymore. And the reason that they're claiming this is basically when you get rid of the removable battery, most laptops have a removable battery because, you know, generally batteries don't last that long, and so you want to be able to easily replace it. Well, they say that by not making it removable, they can recharge or basically three times more than a standard battery, so it's going to actually extend the life of the battery and has basically a 5-year life overall instead of the standard, you know, 1 to 2 years.
How are they going
to
do that?
Well, they say they can make it bigger by 40% when they make it non-removable, because I'm guessing you have all kinds of different cells kind of placed all over in the laptop. So they're claiming 8 hours. The question is whether that's actually going to happen. It's a 5-year, 1,000 recharge battery life. And I'm not sure if they're backing that with a warranty or what, but if that fails, that seems like an expensive...
Then you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, and if you do have a problem, you're going to have to send it in. So we'll see what happens.
Well, extended battery life is something that we would all like.
Yeah,
especially
8 hours,
laptops.
8 hours of real use would be great. If you could use it all day long. And now some of the new, you know, the smaller laptops with the larger batteries, generally the smaller the screen, you can squeeze a little bit more life out of it. But with a 17-inch screen, if they achieve that, that's going to be amazing.
Well, at this point, Kev, I would just like anything more than the 5 minutes I currently get out of my laptop
battery. That's brutal, man. I get probably 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah?
Yeah. Maybe it's time for a new battery.
You know, I don't use it unplugged that much, so.
There you go.
And they're so expensive that it just sort of annoys me.
Yep.
I think, I'm just going to plug it in.
That's right. It's not so bad.
If you're listening and you have any questions or comments for the computer guys here, give us a call, 395-1450. Be happy to help you out in any way that we can here. Also, send us an email, computerguys@whtc.com. Or, as always, we also have our podcast, right, Kev?
That's right, and that's updated every week, so you can go and listen to that. Easiest way is just type it into our computer guys or WHTC in the iTunes Music Store, and you can listen to our podcast anytime you want.
Also, last week at the, I don't know if we had time for this completely at the end of the show, but Windows 7 is the new operating system that's coming out for Microsoft. We've been talking a little bit about that lately.
Yep.
They had announced that anyone would be able to download for free a test version of that. Now, most people probably don't want to do this.
Sure.
But the question is, how does Windows 7 compare to Vista and Windows XP?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the past, when for instance, when Vista was, when they were making that, there was, it didn't really compare that well. Basically, XP in a lot of ways was better than Vista as far as speed.
Sure.
So, what CNET did was basically they went through and took a three of the exact same computers and installed Windows 7, Vista, and XP on all of them.
Sure.
And they have a lot of different things here. First of all, of the three of them, Windows 7 is the fastest one to install the operating system. Also the fastest for boot, for shutting down, for moving a 100 megabyte file.
That's attractive.
Yep. Basically, it was number one in network transfer of 100 megs, moving 2.5 gigs. Anything with moving or transferring, it was by far the fastest. So that's good. Even extracting files on Windows 7 is a lot faster. The only two things it didn't beat Vista or XP on, installing Office 2007 was a little bit slower on Windows 7.
Which you don't do all that often.
Probably not. Most people may never even do that. But the other one, which is slightly confusing, is why it would be slower, is burning a DVD.
Hmm.
But opening a 10-page PDF, much faster on Vista or on Windows 7 versus Vista or XP. Opening Excel and Word documents, all faster on Windows 7. And the interesting thing is, a lot of times in these test releases that Microsoft lets you try out, they're not really worried about speed so much as stability.
Sure.
They want it to run as well as it can. They want feedback, you know, what's not working, that type of thing. So,
you know, that's one of the things is like this time around, more than any other, they've got to get it right. So even when they're, you know, releasing these betas and sort of getting some of the first people in on it, they really need to make a good impression because of all the bad press that Vista's gotten. Not that it deserves all of that. You know, but it's out there. The reputation's out there. And so they need to do everything possible to break that. So having that positive first experience is important.
Now, all those stats I told you, Kev, that was on an AMD computer with 4 gigs of RAM.
Okay, so fast computer.
Even on an Intel dual core with 1 gig of RAM, it was still faster than Vista or XP on pretty much everything.
Wow.
Except for a couple little things here.
That's good.
Moving some files.
That's definitely good.
So definitely something to keep in mind for the future, although I don't think it'll be a little while before we come out with we see that release.
All the stats you had, was that from the PC World Challenge or was that from something else?
I thought it was from CNET. I don't have the original article listed here.
Okay, because the PC World Challenge did a 72 hours of Windows 7 where they just ran it through a series of benchmarks and tests and they came up with some results too.
But so. I just finished, before we came here, Kev, for the computer guys, I finished downloading the Windows 7 here. I'd like to get that installed sometime this week and test it out and see what it's like.
Sure.
Maybe we can make that a project for the end of the week. That'd be kind of fun, huh?
Let's see how the week shapes up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it's insanely busy, you know, sometimes those things don't happen. So, yeah, but anyway, Windows 7, cool. Coming soon to a computer near you. This is interesting. Hasbro dropped a suit against the online version of Scrabble. Hasbro dropped its legal challenge to the makers of an online version of the board game Scrabble. The suit was dropped last week. Hasbro sued a pair of brothers from India this summer. They developed an unauthorized version called Scrabulous after they couldn't find an online version they liked. Hmm. So they said, hey, we want to play Scrabble. There's nothing out there that works like we wanted to, so they invented something. The game was popular on Facebook until it was removed this summer. The court papers didn't give a reason for the case being withdrawn. That was from Facebook.com.
I used to play a lot of Hearts or Euchre online.
Oh, yeah.
Yahoo Euchre
online. Yep.
That's fun.
Yahoo games, man, in college, a lot of Yahoo games.
We got an email here, computerguys@whtc.com from Kelly, wondering, is there an easy way using free software to find out exactly what your internet connection speed is at any given time while on the internet? I currently have SBC DSL and would like to know the speed I am getting compared to the speed that they sold me or compared to the speed of a competitor that a competitor may provide.
There are a ton of free websites, basically, that give you speed tests. One of my favorites is probably Speakeasy, and that's available at speakeasy.net. And they've got a speed test utility at speakeasy.net /speed test that actually takes you right to the application. And from there, you've got an option of which server you want to use. And all that's doing is saying, testing the communication speed between you and that server. Generally, a good idea to do the one closest to you. So that would probably be the Chicago server, since they have one right there. And the reason I like this one is because it gives you what looks like a speedometer.
Yeah, and it looks cool.
And it actually, it moves in correlation to what the speed is that's coming down. So you can see it more real time. A lot of them will run a test and then generate some numbers for you at the end. This is nice because throughout the whole process, you're getting feedback. It is kind of fun to watch. So this is one of my favorites.
Speakeasy.net.
Yeah, speakeasy.net /speed test. Go ahead and try that. And you're probably going to find, you know, if you're like most people, you're getting a little bit under what they tell you you're going to be getting. Like if you're on the 1.5 package with AT&T, you'll probably get between 1,000 and 1,200 just from a number standpoint. Rarely, you're not going to get that 1.5. Now, if you're with like Comcast, it might be insanely fast.
One other thing to remember too is that some of them, I don't remember, is it Comcast offers Speed Burst?
Yeah.
If you have a Comcast cable modem with Speed Burst, for instance, you might run the test and it'll say like, you know, 20
or 10 or 20, and it's like 20,000 or 20 megabits per second or 16,000. And you're probably not even, you know, paying for that when, you know, showing on your bill. But like you were going to say,
well, I was going to say is that that's a speed burst, exactly how it's described, because what they do is, you know, most people, when they're downloading something, they'll go to a website and it'll take maybe a second to download.
Like you when know, you're pulling you don't up
need
a page.
Yeah, you don't need a prolonged download.
Yeah.
Or, for instance, you go to YouTube.com and you just want that video to start playing right away. You don't want to wait 30 seconds for it to queue it up. So, for instance, what Comcast does is they give you a little burst of speed for, I don't know exactly for how long it lasts, but just to let you get that really fast, that information you want right away. You know, you go to a website, you type it in, you don't want to wait for it to slowly load. Boom, sends it to you extra fast. Now, if you're downloading a large video from online, you'll notice that right away, boom, it's fast. It's downloading real fast. Yep. And it'll start to slow down a little bit.
Yep.
And they do that because the reality is most people are just web surfing or checking emails or downloading an attachment in an email. And that doesn't last a long time.
But when you start transferring big files, it doesn't sustain that high speed. It kind of tapers it back as it realizes, okay, this is going to be a big transfer because they only have so much bandwidth and they'll give it to you for a burst, but they're not going to give you that the whole time. They couldn't afford to do that. So they kind of dial it back. So sometimes when you run one of these tests with, you know, something like Comcast, you'll get a really high number. In reality, you're not going to get that for when you're downloading everything.
But for most people, even the basic stuff from AT&T, it's pretty sufficient.
Unless you move a lot of like large photos, movies, download a lot of music or applications, you know, waiting a couple extra seconds for the web page you requested isn't a huge deal. If you do watch a lot of online content, then you will notice. Or if you have a household where there's a lot of people doing that, if it's just one computer, less important. But if you have 3-4 computers and everybody's doing it, you're going to notice that with, you know, a lower speed, things are going to seem to take longer and longer.
Speaking of email, Kev, this is something we've seen a little bit more recently. A lot of times people check their email. If you're using Outlook Express or Windows Mail or Outlook, you just check your email and you go along your way.
Yep.
Life is good.
Yep.
One of the things we've noticed lately is that the amount of email people are storing on their computers is starting to add up.
Yep. And it's not really an issue as much with just text email when it's just some correspondence and just some actual verbiage. It's the attachments. It's the photos. It's the movie clips, which is getting more and more popular. And, you know, you get forwards from your friends or you're on some lists and you start to accumulate that. And, you know, a lot of the older email programs like Outlook Express, if you're using that, or some of the older versions of Outlook, they're just not designed to handle that much.
Yep. So a good idea is every now and then go through your email. And if there are things like attachments or somebody sent you a funny video clip or whatever, rather than leave that in your email program, save that to your documents or my documents folder, or, you know, wherever you want to put it on your computer, and then delete it from your email program. That'll definitely improve the speed of your email.
Yep.
And a lot of times people end up actually losing email because it accumulates so much. And
it just kind of starts corrupting the area where it stores that information. Then you start losing messages or the whole program crashes.
Yep. So, you know, Outlook Express or Outlook, great programs, but really not designed to store huge attachments or a lot of files. And the one place, Kev, everybody always forgets about, the sent items.
Or the deleted items.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that, yeah. Well, I mean, how could you forget that, though? It's right there. It's like the recycle bin on your desktop.
People think it's gone when they hit delete.
That's true.
They forget that it goes to deleted items.
Although, I will admit, I'm guilty of the deleted items, too.
Oh, yeah. Because I go in there every once in a while.
Once a month. I see. But, what I forget is I delete it, and I just forget about it.
Yeah.
As it goes to deleted. So, once a month, every
couple times. But you don't want to check the little box that says empty it every time, do you?
I don't. Well, and not because I ever need it.
Sure.
Once I delete it, I don't really need it.
Okay.
If I need it, I've got little folders. To be honest with you, I've never really thought about it. And because on the computers I've worked on the past, it asks you, and people will store things in there anyway. So it's just one more thing to click on every time.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But if you're using one of those programs, definitely, maybe today, it's a Wednesday, middle of the week, good opportunity to go in there and do a little clean house.
Yep. There you go. Go in there and clean things up a little bit. Makes you feel good.
Absolutely. But
start getting that number down. When you look at that number at the bottom, I've got 6,000 messages in there.
Yeah,
oh,
it adds up. It adds up.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and take this call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Yeah. I want you to go into further about that deleting emails that you don't want, how to get rid of that stuff. Just deleting it, you say, does not get it out of there. So I'll hang up and listen to you.
Sure, no problem.
Explain that a little further.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Say, usually when you're using a program like Outlook or Outlook Express, when you delete an item.
Or any other client, like a piece of software that you run on your computer. So it could be Thunderbird or Eudora or any one of those clients. Like when you launch your email from a program on your computer.
Yep. There's a little folder. It's usually on the left-hand side called deleted items.
Or trash sometimes.
So deleted items. And if you go in there and you click on deleted items, usually there are messages in there because it sort of puts it into the deleted before it actually deletes it.
Just to say, whoops, you accidentally deleted something. We're going to give you one last chance to get that back in case it was an accident.
Yep. So what you do is you just, if you right-click on that folder called deleted items or trash, it usually gives you a second option that says empty deleted items folder.
That's right.
Or let's see here. I don't know. Is there a...
You can always go into it, select all, and then delete it. Or, the easiest way is to do a little
usually
right click.
Edit up. If you click under edit up at the top, there's usually an option that says empty deleted items folder.
Yep. And when you do that, it'll say one more time, are you sure you want to do this? And then if you say yes, it'll clean it out. Now, there is an option in most of these pieces of software to do that automatically every time you close the program. And that's somewhere in the options generally for the program. It varies. But from the tools menu down to options or settings or preferences, depending on the program, you'll see an option that just, sometimes it's in a maintenance heading about emptying deleted items upon exit. And that does it automatically every time. So if you don't want that extra step of saying, whoops, a couple days ago there was something I might have deleted, you can have the program clean that out every time on exit. And now in web-based email programs, usually they do it based on time. So if you have a trash folder in a Yahoo Mail or a Gmail, it'll sit in there for 30 days, after which point in time it cleans it out automatically. So
just a reminder there. What about on Outlook, Kev? Is it edit empty deleted items as well? Click on edit.
Let me double check.
In Outlook Express it is anyway. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's just another place.
Yep, and that's a good idea to not let it accumulate too much stuff. So there is quite a bit that'll hide in there. So
last week we had talked about this, how the video game consoles are essentially computers that play games.
Yep.
And had a little guess here at the end. For 2008, the most played video game console was the PlayStation 2.
That's right. I remember you saying that.
Isn't that amazing? In terms of actual time spent playing the console.
Hmm. And this is on the in Outlook, at least version 2007, it's under the tools menu. Tools and then empty deleted items.
Oh, right. Tools empty. So. Yep. Give us a call here, 395-1450, if you have any questions for the computer guys. Otherwise, computerguys@whtc.com.
That's something we've talked about a lot in the past regarding, illegal music downloads and the RIAA, which is the one, the industry who brings the lawsuits against those people. They're abandoning lawsuits against downloaders. The recording industry is pulling the plug on what has become the biggest weapon against illegal downloading of music. We'll talk more about that after this phone call.
Good afternoon, caller. Let's try this one here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was just looking at the inbox, all the emails I get on the inbox, and I need to sometimes save some in my deleted just for reference and history. If I hit shift and delete on the ones that I don't want, it does not go to my deleted folder. Am I correct?
What program are you using?
Microsoft Outlook. In the inbox, if I highlight the ones that are junk and just highlight them and then shift delete, they won't go to my deleted folder, correct?
They go straight to your trash, it gets rid of them altogether?
Yeah, permanently deletes them from everywhere.
Yeah, I think if you do that, because it'll prompt you and it'll say, are you sure you want to permanently delete the item? Then yes, yep. It does skip that deleted item step.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, and that's a great shortcut that not everybody knows about. If you hit shift to delete on the items, it skips the deleted items altogether and just permanently gets rid of the message. But it does ask you to confirm. But thanks for that call.
You bet.
Hey, look at that. I just learned something.
There you go. And you love those keyboard shortcuts.
I do. Maybe I'll have to switch over. Yep.
Sometime you should all watch Dave work the keyboard. He does a pretty good job.
That's right. Let's take this next call here. Good afternoon, caller. You're on with the computer guys.
Yes. Hello. I'm guilty of having,
true confessions.
Oh, over 4,000 emails on my email inbox, and I'd like to go ahead and save them to a CD, and then when I get time, I can go back and delete them. But is there any way I can just go ahead and put them all on a CD so that, you know, I can do that and get them off of my computer?
Well, sort of. You know, unfortunately, if you keep your email in an email program, getting them to a CD is... You'd probably be better off just going through and deleting them and then backing it up, because it's sort of a complicated process to back up an email program.
Yeah,
then clean it up later.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways to do it. You can actually do the individual messages, basically, and that's probably the easiest thing to do. The only thing is you're going to need to have that program in place when you go back to review them. So it's not quite as simple as just copying them over to a CD. It can be done, yes, but depending on the program you're using, the actual reviewing of those messages at a later point in time can be a little more complicated. But we'd love to talk more about that in subsequent weeks. If we weren't able to take your call today, give us a call during the week. 394-4940 is our number. We are from Macatawa Technologies. We're located on the south side of Holland, 399 East 32nd Street. That's one block west of the corner of 32nd and 31. Also, check out the podcast. Easiest way to do that, type WHTC or the computer guys into the iTunes Music Store, and you can listen to the podcast anytime you want.
That's right. Well, thanks again. If we weren't able to get to your call or if we got cut short there, we'll be back every Wednesday afternoon here on 1450 WHTC. Thanks again and have a great week.